Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me grab the headphones. I'll get dialed into the studio. Get these dogs to shut up. Oh, goodness. I better close the window or the neighbors are going to get mad. Hope the guests call in tonight. Wonder if anybody's going to call in. Well, let's do this thing.
It's Rated G Radio, and this is your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey, everybody. I think I'm realizing it's the last Thursday of September, and you are live with Rated G Radio, and I'm your host, Garrett Miller. We'll be here for the next hour. We're going to be talking to Matt Anderson of Theater People in just a real quick moment, but a couple programming notes I just want to make everybody aware of. What day of the week is it? I'm looking at the calendar right here. Friday's show, we have the Chrysagas Brothers live from Ohio. We're going to be doing a very special Friday night dance party starting at 6 p.m. East, 3 p.m. West. We're going to be playing their brand new album, Conversations with God, and I'm uploading some of the songs now, and I'm looking at their CD going, holy cow, who has 19 songs on a CD and puts this out as one CD? The Chrysagas Brothers do. Sean and Brian, with their infectious laugh, will be telling their tale of what's been going on in the life of these dynamic Christian singing twins in the last year, since we've had them on last, and they are shopping a new reality TV show around, so we're going to be talking about their show, Saved by the Brothers. And that'll be live tomorrow night, 6 p.m. East, 3 West, and their entire album, The Conversations with God. I don't know if we can get 19 songs in 2 hours, but we're going to try. This Saturday, if you're in the Southern California area, our recent Friday night dance party guest, Fontaine's Muse, they're going to be performing at the Richmond Street Festival. That'll be this Saturday, September 27th. It says 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., but if I check their Facebook fan page, it says I think they actually start performing at 10 a.m. So regardless, there'll be a full day of performance there at the Richmond Street Festival. The address is 232 Main Street in El Segundo, 90245. They're going to have their Festi tent. I don't know what that is, but it sounds fun. And they're going to be doing sets on the hour starting at 10. There's going to be rides, food, bounce. I'm hoping that's like a bouncy castle. Fashion, games, music, dance, family fun, and it's presented by the Kiwanis Club of El Segundo. Again, that's the Richmond Street Festival. Fontaine's Muse is going to be there. And without further ado, I want to welcome Matt Anderson to Rated G Radio. Matt, how are you today?
Good, Garrett. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. I need to thank Leah Horton for posting on, I think, Facebook. She says, you know, come on, guys,
yeah,
you know, if you wanted a season two and so forth. And I'm like, Leah's attached to yet another project. You know, she's always,
right,
always so busy and always so successful in all the things that she does. And so she said, oh, yeah, you've got to check out this web thing, this phenomenon called Theater People. And I'm like, okay, great. And so I went and checked it out. And 10 episodes later, it's like I'm watching them back to back to back to back to back. Matt, this is like must-see TV. This is better than NBC on a Thursday night.
Thank you, man. That's what we're shooting for.
I'm telling you. Okay, so I need to back up here and start with all the formalities here. Like, number one, welcome to the show, and tell everybody about yourself, and then we're going to get to all the stuff having to do with Theater People, because I want to know everything.
Cool, yeah. I created and write and direct Theater People. I produce it with my co-producers, and we are based out of Minneapolis here, and last year we released the first season after a very long shoot period, and in the year since it's been out, I guess it's almost a year now, it's done really well. Like, it's found its audience to a certain extent. It's found its, you know, the web series thing is so, the whole internet is such a wilderness. It's like just finding any sort of, you know, pocket of people who are wanting to watch your stuff is
mm-hmm.
pretty amazing. And I found some people. We've got about 15,000 episode views at this point, which is pretty good for we're not Funny or Die. We're not doing little 3-minute skits. It's you know, 8 to 10 minute episodes, and it's a 10 episode story arc, and it's really narrative, so you can't really just drop in on episode 4. Like, you have to kind of watch it through. And that's a lot to ask for people on the internet. So, we feel very fortunate to have found the audience we've found.
I'm telling you, it was such a shocking, pleasant surprise. And I don't know why I was surprised, because anything that Lee's attached to is always first class. But the surprise, I think, was for me is just to find out how come I hadn't heard about this before, because this is brilliant writing. It's brilliant acting. It's filmed with gorgeous colors and effects and all of the things you'd expect for like a big Hollywood production. I'm like, and these are amazingly brilliantly talented actors and people that are connected to your project out of Minnesota. I'm like, you've got stars there that are just like hiding away, and this is the best kept secret. And I'm like, we need to tell this story. But so if I can like indulge and just talk about you for just a second here, Matt, what's your background? What did you just wake up one day as a screenwriter or as a director, or did you go to school for this?
I kind of woke up one day when I was about 14 and was a screenwriter. I just passed 38 now, so it's been a long road, but yeah, it's been something I've been doing and loving to do for a really long time. I wrote my first feature script, I think when I was about 14 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, was always a film guy. Like, film was just always my thing, and that's what I wanted to be working on. And when I was about 18, I started doing some acting around the cities here. The Twin Cities has a huge theater population. Like, it's kind of under the radar, but we have a ton of both, like, regional professional theaters, and we have a ton of amateur independent theaters. I should say amateur and independent theaters, because it's a different thing. A lot of the people who work in independent theater are theater professionals, but they find projects they want to work at smaller stages and make the sacrifices necessary to do the work they want to do, and it's just a really great supportive community. And I started working on stage because I felt like it was going to make me a better director, to be able to kind of understand things from the acting side. I had done some of it in school, but it was really after high school and when I kind of got out in the world that I decided to give it a shot, and I was really fortunate. I got to work with a lot of really great people, got to know a lot of great theaters in town, and I did that for about 10 years.
Wow. So, okay, I have to ask you this question, because this I find – your answer not only I say funny because I don't mean funny, haha, but funny, ironic. I had somebody on about a week or so ago, and she is a director, and you know, I would say getting her toes wet more than somebody who's actually done, you know, projects like you've done and all of this. And one of the things that she tells me that she's always struggling to do is to be an actor first, because she wants to understand what it's like to be an actor who's being directed. But her real love in life is being a director. So I it's two people in the course of a 7-day period. I've never heard that before. Do you find that that's a fairly common approach for a lot of directors, or is this just, you know, coincidence that, you know, you are going down that same type of a path?
I don't know that it's necessarily the way that a lot of directors go, but I do think that you find that the directors that you would kind of characterize as actors directors have some kind of acting background. Like, it's so helpful in figuring out how to communicate your ideas to somebody who has to, you know, interpret them, you know, and it makes it so you sort of learn a language that lets you communicate more clearly with your cast and get, you know, either get more what you're looking for, or between you and the actors discover something that, you know, in an ideal world, discover something together that is even better than you had been thinking would be.
Oh, and that makes perfect sense. So when did you, because if anybody out there is listening tonight who's actually seeing the web series Theater People, you watch this and you're just like, you have to be cackling in your chairs watching this, because if you've been around local theater or any type of theatrical production, I think you've captured the essence of exactly what takes place across the country and around the world behind the scenes and interpersonally between the actors as actors and the people playing, you know, the roles themselves. So, you know, the actors playing the actor. When did you come up with the idea to write such a ironic story like Theater People?
Well, it kind of came out of a few things. One is I've just always been a huge believer that the Twin Cities, where I come from, Minneapolis and St. Paul, has this huge natural resource in terms of this theater community. Like, we've got some pretty amazing depth to our talent pool here. And even when I was starting out and just making little short films or, you know, trying to get features made and, you know, struggling to find financing, like, the big push for me was always there's all these fantastic actors. And that I knew that, like, I love all kinds of films. I love films that are really, you know, visual first. I love films that are really idea first. But I knew that what I was in a position to do here in town was really make work that was actor first, because there were all of these fantastic mm-hmm. talents around me.
Oh, yeah.
That with a good project, I felt like I could get on board. And so that was always kind of where I came from. So that was part of it. A big part of it was burnout.
That's honest.
After about, like I said, I was acting for about 10 years, and then I moved out to L.A. I'd been writing, you know, the whole time that I was acting, and I had a script that got some heat out there and got me representation, and I was having lots of meetings, and I was going back and forth, and I'm like, you know, I kind of have to throw all my eggs in one basket and just see where this will go. So I stopped acting and excuse me, moved to LA. And I was out there for about 7 years, and I was doing the spec thing. You know, I was writing spec scripts, and
sure.
My managers were fantastic, and, you know, they were getting my stuff out there, and I was having all kinds of meetings and all kinds of scripts that people loved and all kinds of scripts that people weren't buying. And it's a grind, you know. The more you're familiar with kind of how that scene works, it doesn't give you a lot back.
I can see that. So what got you to go back home?
I had just finished another spec script. It had gone out after about 2.5 years of writing on it, and it hadn't sold. And, you know, when you're writing scripts like that, the process can be really long. Like I say, this was the longest one. I was on this idea for 2.5 years. And then once it goes out to the studios, and this had been the case with the other handful of scripts I'd had go out to the studios, mm-hmm. you get your nose very quickly. So, like, you write for 2.5 years on a script, and then it goes out on a Monday, and generally by Friday you've gotten all of your responses.
Really? So, that quick?
Yeah. If you're dealing with production companies, it's a lot longer, but if you're going directly to the studios, generally speaking, production companies pick it up, like, they see the script on a Monday. By Wednesday, you know which production companies are interested. They take them into the studios, and by Friday, you've got your answer. So you can work, and this was what happened. You can work for 2.5 years on a script, and in a week, you know that it's dead in the water.
Wow.
So it's tough, and this had been the fourth or fifth experience I'd had like this, not, like I say, all that long. But usually, you know, on average, working on a script for 6 months to a year, and you really get invested and you throw a lot into it and you spend a lot of time on it, and it goes out, and then it's, well, that one didn't hit, but we've got lots of meetings from people who love your stuff, and, you know, we'll move you on to the next thing. And so it had been uh-huh. a bunch of projects that hadn't come to fruition. It had been a lot of work. It had been a lot of writing. It was great. Like, I am such a better writer than I was before I went out there, because when you're writing on demand like that, you're getting notes from producers and you're getting notes from studios, and you're trying to kind of, before it goes out, try to bulletproof it so that when it goes out, it hits. Like, you become a much better writer. So, like, I don't regret the experience at all, but after a bunch of these, it was like, ugh, it's so much work to go into a project only to have it not get made, you know?
Right.
All of those projects stopped on the page. And I had just, my day job had just closed their doors, and it was just a good time. I I was never an LA guy. I found a lot of people that I really liked who are still my family out there. But the pace and the scale and everything, I don't know. Like, I moved out there when I was 29, and I've always, you know, maybe I waited too long, but it was, I always felt more comfortable back in Minneapolis. And kind of the idea from the get-go had been to go out there, try and sell a script so I could come back here with the money that I needed to be able to make the projects that I wanted to make here.
There you go.
So
yeah. That catch 22 a little bit.
Right? And that's, you know, that's the dream. So you go out there and you know, you buy your lottery tickets and you hope that you're going to win. But after about 7 years of that, I was just kind of done.
You're done.
Like, I forgot why I liked writing in the first place. And it was just not something I was taking enjoyment from anymore. And so I decided to move back here. And on the way back here, I bought a camera, a little $700 DSLR Canon camera. And a friend of mine, Jen, who's actually in Theater People, came out, and we drove back together, and we made a little short film on the way just because I kind of wanted to try it out. I hadn't been buying the camera for 10 years at that point.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out that while I had been in L.A., everything had kind of changed. Like, when I was making short films here and when I was trying to get features up, everything was still film, which meant it was hugely expensive. Like, I made 3 or 4 short films and a feature and totally bankrupted myself. I just totally put myself – I didn't officially go bankrupt, but, you know, for all intents and purposes – and I couldn't keep doing it. My feature, you know, cost $22,000, and half of that was on my credit card. You know,
yeah.
I mean, like, but, and so I had focused on writing because writing is free, and it was always my favorite part of the process anyway. So coming back, I picked up this little $700 camera and was like, I just need to shoot something. Like, it's been too long. I haven't seen anything get made. I need to work. And we shot a little short film on our drive back here. We stopped in Monument Valley, and we hit Devil's Tower, and we hit the Badlands, and just got a lot of this really great scenic stuff. And the camera was great. It was great. Like, it was a total, like, I knew that this was out there. I knew that the revolution had happened. I knew that people were doing this. But I never realized until I was on that trip that technology had moved so far ahead that the kind of stuff that I wanted to make that was really actor-first and character-based and dialogue-driven was not in any way held back by a little $700 camera from Best Buy.
Isn't that crazy?
It was amazing. It absolutely changed everything for me.
Well, I loved hearing that because it gives – I think one of the things that I think I'm really inspired by you tonight, Matt, is the fact that you know, you've taken – you know, all of this experience that you were gaining in Minneapolis, came out to L.A., got more experience, and then went back and then said, you know what, I'm going to make technology work for me, and, you know, took what had changed and applied it to what you're doing today. So, the fact that you did that warms my heart in the biggest ways possible because I just see so many other opportunities for you. So when you finally got back, is that when you came up with the idea of writing Theater People, and how did the genesis of that come about?
I've been playing with the idea for a while. You know, TV, at the same time, you know, during that same 7-year period while I was in L.A., film had kind of started to disappoint a lot of people. It got more and more mainstream. It got more and more about, you know, adapting a board game than telling an interesting original story. And at the same time, TV was getting great. And TV now is where most writers want to be. Like, TV is where the really exciting stuff is happening. And so I had always thought my management was primarily feature film, and that's what I was writing. But I always thought, you know, if I got a chance to ever work on a show, like if I had a shot at being a staff writer, something like that, or to create something, I always felt like I had two ideas that were great for sitcoms. I had worked nights for 12 years and was like, there's a night shift sitcom that absolutely should happen. And I'd worked in the theater here for 10 years. And coming back here, I thought, well, I've got this camera now, and it is what it is, but I think it's good enough. And I just need to work. And I want to work on a project that's going to kind of fill me up in a way that the studio spec thing had sort of drained me. Like, I wanted to work with people that I liked working with. I wanted to work on something that I thought was good without a mind to a market or a demographic or, you know, anything like that, and just kind of follow my own lights for a while. And it occurred to me that the best way to be able to do all of that would be to do a series about the theater community, because suddenly you've got all kinds of actors. Like, you can have this huge cast.
Oh,
theater people ended up having a 50-plus
you had a ton of people.
Speaking role cast. Yeah, it's got 20 principal characters. Like, it got very big, and that's what I wanted it to be. Like, I really wanted to be able to, like, involve as many people, because there's not a ton of film stuff that goes on here. We've got some good industrial stuff and commercial stuff and things like that, and there's definitely some independent film that happens, but generally speaking, the experience that the people I'm working with have is 90% on stage. And I always felt like there's this whole idea that it can be really difficult for stage actors to transition to screen, and I never really caught with that idea. Like, I always felt like it's the same tool set, and especially when you're working with trained actors, whether they're classically trained or trained in school or just trained by doing roles around town, like, they've all built up this amazing tool set. They can do, if you can tell them what you need from them, they can do
they're
it.
There.
Like, they have so much facility. And so I looked around and was like, why not start with a show about this and just get out there. We didn't have any money. Like, I used that same $700 camera.
You used the same Canon camera for shooting this?
Yep.
You're kidding.
No, not
that
only that,
wild.
I shot it myself, and I do not know how to shoot things. it was completely utilitarian, because we were like, okay, what is the best way for us just to be able to go out every weekend and shoot on a project? And it was just not to require a lot of people. So most of our shoots were like two person crews. It was literally me behind the camera and my co-producer holding the microphone. Like, if we were lucky, we had somebody helping with lights or somebody clapping for us, and that was it. Like,
that
it was, and that's
staggering.
And right? It doesn't get in the way. Like, that was always my concern. Like, oh, it's going to look cheap. Like, I feel like you have to break through this wall.
It looks great.
Thank you. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
It was so empowering. Like, it was, the whole project was just about, and I told this to the people who we signed on to work for it, and everybody was working for free. Everybody was donating their time. Everybody was doing plays while we were doing this.
Oh, my gosh.
And I told them, I have no idea how it's going to turn out. What I can promise you is that it will get finished and you'll see it. Because with a lot of independent films, like, people go out, they work
finished,
on them, and
yeah.
then they never even get
Nothing.
Finished. Like, you know, I mean, and I get it. I come from that. I understand how difficult it can be and all the obstacles. But that was my promise that I made in exchange for not being able to pay people. I was like, I think you're going to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be able to see it when it's done. Like, that's all I can guarantee. But, like, this is an experiment.
Honestly, that's a great promise to make people, because you're absolutely right. So much of what goes on just doesn't ever, you know, and God bless America, you know, that's just the way it is. But when you see something that's completed like this, and to know that you did it on your $700 camera, astounding.
Yep.
So, okay, can we talk about your writing on this and how you came up with the characters? Because that, to me, that was, honestly, that was what I thought, oh, this is just going to be painful to sit through. And then, you know, you get through, like, the first minute of the first episode, and you're like, okay, I'm totally hooked. And, you know, I was disappointed it was just 10 episodes. I was like, you know, I could have stood for 100, you know, because...
Right? That's great. Thank you. There's a lot left to explore there.
Well, in the 10 episodes, though, you have a complete story arc. You have great interpersonal relationships. The relationships change. The people change. The dynamics change. And you're getting such rich dialogue out of, I say, 10 episodes. And I don't mean to minimize that, but I'm just like, I'm shocked that you got so much in such a short period of time, and it doesn't feel rushed. It feels timed right. And the actors that you have in all of the roles are just brilliant. And I'm in awe of this, but how did you develop what you wrote for the the script, because, you know, I think if I'm going to make a comment about anything, the thing that I think is the funniest is the fact that you have the husband and wife who are now divorced with other people, and of course the guy wants to play Romeo, is an older Romeo, you know, and of course I won't give the whole thing away because everybody has to see it, but I went, oh Lord, I totally relate to that, and it's just, you know, the whole thing. I would hope that maybe some of these characters you are writing from personal experience from, you know, or knowing other people that might have resembled. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's the thing. Like, you spend enough time, and really this community was my family for 10 years of working in it. And it's such a weird thing. Like the theater community is so, I think, I don't have, you know, I have deep interests, but I don't have a lot of interests. But I feel like it's kind of unique in the fact that, especially when you're dealing with an independent theater community, you've got, like, you bring these people together to do a show. Everybody signs on. You work with these people, some of whom you've never met before, intensely, every day. Like, on average, like, shows here rehearse 5 or 6 days a week for about a month, and then they'll usually do like a 3 or 4 month run. That's average. So you're working with these people intensely every night for basically 2 months for the most part. And then the show's over and everybody kind of goes off to do a different show and you meet a whole bunch of new people, and like your personal sort of like theater family just keeps growing and growing. And so you get to know all of these fantastic personalities and you run into so many of these situations. There are absolutely companies in town here, and luckily I can say companies. Like, it's not just there is, with maybe one or two exceptions, like, nobody in the show is based on any one person or one circumstance. For the most part, it's like I can point to three different theater companies that had to figure out how to keep their theater company together when their relationship ended, or when divorce happened, or when whatever. Like, it's a surprisingly common thing, but it's also, you know, loaded with common possibilities, because you've got this working relationship that you're really trying to, you know, hold together for the sake of the company. Like, you know, you're doing it for the sake of the kids. And,
right.
And yet at the same time, you're in the middle of this totally weird personal dynamic, and, you know, I mean, that stuff is, you run into this stuff on every show that you do. And so, like, this was just all kinds of accumulation of those experiences.
Well, it's just, you see this, and if you've ever done any type of acting, or if you've been around anybody who's been an actor or any of that, you just see the dynamics that are going on here and going, like, oh, I have seen that before. And it is so funny to watch these people go through it, because you know exactly what's going to happen, and then, boom, it happens. And you're like, I told you. So as an actor or as a director or as somebody who's been behind the scenes outside of theater people, what has been maybe like one of the craziest things that you've ever run into that just really made you shake your head even today?
Oh, in terms of theater stuff, man, let me think. That's a great question. Let me think about that for a second. The thing is, it becomes so commonplace. Like, no matter how weird it is in the moment, like, it's totally true that the show has to go on, and so everybody everybody figures out a way to negotiate it, and they get through it, and they make it work. And so, like, what seems absolutely insane in the moment, like, a month or two later, people ask you, is that actually true? And you're like, I mean, it was. I guess it's weird now that you mention it.
Yeah, now that you mention it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, boy. let me get back to you on that one. I have a
okay,
feeling
that's
stuff will occur to me.
That's fair. So when you sat down to write theater people, did you know at the beginning that you were going to write a 10-episode thing, or was it going to be a 1-episode or a 50-episode or a 2-hour Lifetime movie? I mean, what was your goal in creating this?
That was a huge decision to make, because the whole web series landscape is the Wild West right now. Like, there really aren't any standards.
Okay.
And we
but
kind
you knew you were
going to
do it
of,
as a web series?
Yeah, because I felt like this was the first really, really stupid thing that I did was I came back here and I've got my camera and I thought, okay, I just want to work. I'm going to do a project. And I could do a feature. I've got a bunch of feature scripts. Or I could do this web series. I'll do this web series because that'll be easier. That made sense to me. Like, it'll be smaller.
Sure.
It'll be smaller. It'll be easier.
Smaller, easier.
I would say that, you know, a lot of independent features are probably shot in 10 to 15 days with probably a principal cast of 5, 6, 7 people. Like, I'd say,
right.
I'd say a lot of indie films fall into that range.
You get, our web you get four times that,
ended,
yeah.
Oh, our web series had 35 shoot days over 10 months, and we have 50 speaking characters and 20 primary characters. Like, it was, I don't know what I was thinking. Like, I did not take the long view on this one, but that seemed like it was going to be the easier project to do. So we did decide pretty early that it was going to be a web series, and we were just going to shoot it however we could. Like, we didn't have money. We were just going to shoot it when we were able to. We were going to work around, you know, the conflicts of our cast members, and we're going to do it because we just want to be working. My co-producer,
right.
Lydia, and I, like, just we want to be doing stuff. We don't want to be talking about it anymore. We just want to be doing it. So
just do it.
We decided
yeah.
that the web series was the way to go.
Okay.
And
well,
then it's like, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, is it?
And what
be,
did that
I,
look like,
liked,
for you?
What did the web series possibility look like for me?
Yeah. So when you and your partner decided that, yeah, this is what we want to do. I mean, did you? I mean, describe that for me. I guess what was your original thought?
Well, there are three of us. It's me and my producer Lydia and my producer Chris. And we really just came at it from a position of what's the story that we want to tell, how much time do we need to tell it, how can we make it happen with the resources that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of sketched out the general outline to begin with. I liked, I don't know, 10 seemed like a round number. We kind of flouted the convention, and this was the first, you know, sort of decision we made to not really, you know, go with the standard template. Generally, they say that web episodes, especially for comedies, like 5-6 minutes is the long side. Like, they recommend it's more like 3 or 4, and that's just a different model. Like, that's
right.
That's a skit. That's, you know, a situation. You put a couple of characters that you've established in a situation. You play it out. There's a punchline. Generally speaking, that's how it goes. But I knew that I wanted to do something that was more like an actual sitcom. You know, I wanted something that was a longer arc. I wanted something that was completely self-contained in a season, but also kind of created this world that we could go back to for other stories. And it had an A story and a B story. So we've got our one theater mm-hmm. that's putting on Romeo and Juliet. That's our A story. We spend most of the time with them. And then every once in a while, we cut to our B story, which is this weird little theater run by this weird avant-garde director. And, you know, then we can kind of get a little weirder for part of it, and we'll tell both stories as they go from, you know, announcing the plays, casting the show, and then it kind of, the structure kind of fell into place. It was like, okay, episode one is called Day Jobs. We're just going to show what the difference is between how these people are earning a living, what they're doing during the day, and they're making art, they're making entertainment, they're working actors at night. And so that's going to be kind of a standalone. That'll be our pilot. And then after that, it's like episode two is the announcement of the shows, like people finding out that these shows are going on. Episode three is auditions. Episode four is callbacks. Episode five is the first read through. Six is, and I'm probably missing one here, but six is blocking. Seven is tech rehearsal. Eight is dress rehearsal, nine is opening night, and then 10 is kind of the after party after opening night. So the structure just kind of fell into place at that point.
And that just makes so much sense when you describe it like that. But to, you know, to watch the episodes just as a viewer, unless you're really paying attention to like the episode title, everything
right.
just kind of like
right.
flows in a very natural progression. It's very organic. And it's just exactly as you'd expect. Oh, okay, you know, here's what I do during the day. Oh, you know, and then here's the night. You know, and exactly just as you described
yep.
it. So, I love the fact that you did the 10 episodes. It took a million years to film. You got, you know, the
yeah.
50 people that were on the set, speaking roles, and all of this other fun stuff that has happened. You've got 15,000 people that have taken a look at it. Do you have any idea what kind of a budget you had to put together for season one to make that happen? And if you don't want to go down that road, that's okay. I'm just curious.
No, that's totally fine. It's tough to estimate because the way that we were approaching it was really, we kind of had a, one thing we did have a long view for was like, where could this project go, and how do we get it made? And this kind of, you know, introduces what's going on right now, which is we're running a Kickstarter campaign right now for season two. We've got a few days left on that, and that was stage two. Stage one was we need to show that this is something that's good. Like, we need to show that we can make something good. And then after that, we'll go out to our community and we'll try and community source season two. And then after that, we'll have two seasons of increasing quality, increasing production value. And then we can go out to advertisers, sponsors, networks. Like, there are networks exclusively programming web series these days. So, like, we wanted to have a couple of seasons under our belt that we can go to them and say, this is what we can do with limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
Find us a home. Like, find a place for us to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So the first season was just out of pocket. Like, we and Lydia would kind of kill me for saying this, but, like, we didn't track a lot of it. Like, it was really on a week-to-week basis, like, we would sit down and say, okay, who's available this weekend? Like, who doesn't have a show?
Yep.
Who's not in rehearsals? Which cast members do we have? Okay, we've got these six, and then we'd look at our outline and we'd say, which of these scenes requires only those six people? And then we would contact our actors and be like, can you give us 4 hours on Saturday? We'd say, okay, for that scene, we need a theater, which is harder than you might think. What theaters are dark? Who might be willing to do us a favor? We need these set pieces. We need, a pair of assless chaps and a dragon puppet. And then we would spend that week or 2 weeks putting together everything we needed for that shoot and just paying for it out of our pocket. Like, if we needed a dragon puppet, we got a dragon puppet. We spent a lot of time at Goodwill. We spent a lot of time begging favors off of costume departments at theaters around town, and everybody was really, really supportive. Like, and we knew that they would be. Like, that's just this community.
And
anybody who was in a position to help us helped us.
So would now be a good time to give some blatant plugs for anybody that you really want to give a shout out to, from either cast or crew, or I mean, there's probably like hundreds of people, but
there's so many. Like, I mean, even from just the pilot, and the pilot was designed to be the most ambitious episode, because you're going to get more eyes on your pilot than you're going to get on anything else, and you really have to sell people off that pilot. And so, like, we did the pilot, and I think the pilot has like 15 locations. Like, we're shooting in like four different theaters, we're shooting in offices, we're shooting in restaurants, we're shooting backstage, we're shooting on stage, we're shooting exteriors. Like, I had a couple of people ask me after, because we launched the episodes one by one. And I had a couple of people ask me after episode one, they're like, how are you keeping this up? And I said, we're not. Like, this is, we will condense very quickly.
Uh-huh.
Like, once you've established that world, then, and this was something that I had learned over the years writing, like, once you establish the world, you don't have to keep establishing it. Like, once you establish the world of a real place, it's done. And then you can just say, this takes place in that world. And you don't have to keep going to 15 locations every episode, you know? And so over the course of the episodes, we really narrow our focus to these two troops, and they're doing their show. And, you know, I cannot give too much credit to my producer, Lydia, because I didn't limit myself when I was writing at all. Like, I literally, as I was writing each episode and, you know, presenting them to her, I never said, can we do this? I just was like, okay, well, this is where I would like to be. And, you know, so there would be times when I would go up to her and say, okay, I need a SWAT team for next week's shoot. Can we do a SWAT team? And she would give me this look, and she would sigh, and she would say, yes, I will get you a SWAT team.
Uh-huh. And then you have a SWAT team.
And then you have a SWAT team. And, you know, if you handle it right and you shoot it, you know, with an eye toward, you know, what you've got and not what you don't have, you can make it play.
Right.
So it was,
and,
you know, it was,
and not to give anything
it
away, but
ridiculous.
that part of the web series was brilliant when the SWAT team came in.
Thank you.
So I'm, yeah.
Thanks. And that was actually, I mean, that is one of the things that I will say is, okay, so that is based on, I don't think I'm out of line here. This is all public record, but there was, okay, going back to your question about the craziest stuff that we ran into, like that I've run into in theater, we had an actress in town here, a much loved actress who worked all the time and was very much an awesome motherly figure to a lot of the scene, who one day got picked up by the FBI. It turned out she'd been a fugitive from justice since the 70s.
Holy cow. Wow.
Yeah. And she had you know, built a new life for herself. She'd never, to my knowledge, never had trouble with the law again. Like, she had been a radical with a militant group. I don't think I'm mischaracterizing that. And there was a warrant out. She hadn't hurt anybody, killed anybody, but she had definitely broken the law in a big way. And she'd been a fugitive for 20-some years. And I don't even remember if she was doing a show at the time, but she probably was. She was usually
doing
shows.
You'd have to think so, right?
One day, I remember I was traveling. I was at a friend's wedding in Baltimore, and I was talking to a friend back home, and he's like, yeah, they just picked her up. I'm like, what do you mean they picked her up? I'm like, turns out, so that was real. Like, she had completely changed her life. She had built a family here. She had built a career as an actress, which, as one of the characters in the show says, seems like it would be very high profile, but how many people were in your audience last night? And so I guess that would probably be it. That was the one incident that I really knew, just because it's so bizarre. I was a little edgy about it because I was like, are people going to get offended by this? Like, I did not know her. I'd met her. Like, we were not friends, but I'm like, I'm poking fun at the situation for sure. But like, it's not a judgment call. Like, it's just weird. It's just weird.
Yeah.
And so that was the one thing that I knew I wanted to be a plot point in the show.
Well, I'm glad you threw it in, because I didn't see that coming a mile away. And that was brilliant. So thank you for
that.
We've chit-chatted for 40 minutes here, and I am grateful to you for indulging me for that. But we've got 20 minutes left, and now is the time for us to talk about what you're going to be doing in Season 2 and your global fundraising program that you have on Kickstarter. I have your Kickstarter campaign up, and for everybody who's listening to the show tonight, in the show body, I think there's three links for you to click on. There's a place for you to click and like the Theater People's Facebook fan page. You can also click the actual Theater People web series, so you can go to the webpage and then actually watch all 10 episodes that we're talking about tonight. But the most important one is the third link on there, and it says donate to the Season 2 Kickstarter campaign. If you click on that tonight, their goal is $15,000. They are currently at $12,412 with 5 days to go. So they need about $2,600, folks, to get their campaign. And if you don't know this, if you don't fully fund the Kickstarter campaign within your time frame, you don't get any money. So they can raise $2,600 in the next 5 days, and it's really important to do so. So besides the fact that I'm going to sound like I'm on a telethon here saying, everybody please call in tonight and give until it hurts, what do you have in store for Season 2 when this gets, I don't want to say if it gets funded, but when it gets funded, that people are going to freak out and go like, oh my God, this is just as brilliant, if not more so than Season 1?
Well, thank you very much for the push. Like, I've been feeling like I'm on a telethon for the last 25 days. I have not kickstarted in the past. Like, this is our first experience doing this.
You
got to
do it, though. If you don't do it, it doesn't get done.
That's it. Like, you know, and again, we had this long view in place, and the whole idea was, we do Season 1, everybody works for free, everybody pitches in, we see what kind of an audience we can get, and then if we can get a supportive enough audience, then we go to them, we give them the show for free. Like, you can watch all of Season 1 for free at theaterpeoplewebseries.com, and we like that model. Like, we didn't want to charge to view, we wanted to make it free, and we'd like to, you know, keep doing that. But then we say, okay, if you liked what you saw, pay what you think it's worth, you know, pitch something in so that we can keep doing it. Like, that seems like a really good model to me. It's like you can go to a show or go to a movie and not pay when you walk in, but pay when you walk out. If you enjoyed it,
I love that idea.
You know, give what you can give. Like, it just makes so much sense. Like, if it can work that way, that just seems so ideal to me.
And so
yeah.
For Season 2, Have you come up with, like, any type of a – I mean, how do you top season one? It's like, who shot J.R. in Dallas? It's like, what do you do after that?
Well, this is a good question, like, and I want to talk about it, but it'll be sort of – we'll sort of be hedging around it a little bit because –
That's fine. You hedge all you need to. I don't need you to give away the –
I'm a good pragmatic Minnesotan, and we're –
Okay.
I'm still very much saying if we make it. Like, we sort of have – not even amongst the producers really like sat down to discuss because we kind of don't want to jinx it. Like as soon as we're funded, we have, you know, stuff that's in the shoot. But the general idea is season two, we want to be the next step up from season one, both in terms of production value, which is why I never answered your first question. I would guess season one probably costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $3,000 or $4,000.
That's not bad.
No. I mean, it's bad if it's coming on your credit card, but...
Well, sure, but you know, for a 10-episode, you know, for what you got out of that, that's
I'm telling you, man, it was so empowering. Like, it was so empowering to just be able to get out there every week, have something to shoot, be able to do it, like, to do it well enough where you can watch it without thinking, ugh, they couldn't afford to do it the way they wanted to do it. You know, like, to be able to just watch it as a show. Like,
mm-hmm,
that was the whole...
Mm-hmm,
that was.
Mm-hmm.
I always said to Lydia that if we could make something that people watched as a show instead of watching as a thing that their friends made, like that was what we were shooting for. Like watch it. If you can watch it as a show, enjoy the characters, like, and not be aware of the fact that it was, you know, completely low budget. And we've got somebody holding the light next to the camera because otherwise the scene
right.
is too dark. So that was season one. Season two is a $15,000 budget. We want to step up to better production values, and we also want to expand the scope of it. And the idea, as far as storylines go, is we want to explore other areas of the theater community. Theater People Season 1 was very much about the indie scene. Well, we've got people in the indie scene who also work on the regional scene. They work at the Guthrie, or they work at Penumbra, or they work at the Jungle, or they work at these higher level theaters where occasionally the theaters will be working with known names.
Sure.
Known names, not no names.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, a lot of times it's people coming back. Like there are people who have come out of the Twin Cities theater scene, like T.R. Knight, for example, from Grey's Anatomy, came from, he was a Guthrie actor. He was a Jungle actor. Like he, you know, so we've had people who come and they'll come back. And so like you get this good mix of professional theater people, they're bringing them in from Broadway or whatever, working with the people who are, you know, 2 months later working on a small stage in a black box and doing something for no pay. So like we want to be able to expand the scope to those bigger theaters. We have people who work in corporate theater, like doing skits, doing like corporate sponsored, whether it be, you know, educational theater or team building, improv, you know, going out to companies and interacting with them for like an offsite or a team building day. Like all of that stuff is still theater, and it's pockets of theater that we haven't even touched on yet.
So with
season two, we want to watch some of our season one people, and that's one thing. We want to bring back everybody from season one in some capacity, but we want to rotate them. They won't all be principals in season two. We'll have a bunch of new principals, and they'll be intermingling with the old people.
Kind of like American Horror Story, except on theater people level.
Yes, exactly. And the characters will remain the same. Like, we'll bring characters back from season one, and they'll be doing a new show, just like we all do. Like, after your 2 months together,
sure.
you go off and you work with a whole different group of people. And we've got
mm-hmm.
so many more actors here in town that we want to be able to kind of show to the world that we want to expand that world. So season two, what we want to do is make it bigger, make it more professional, make it something that puts us in a position to be able to go out and find those deeper pockets, those networks or whatever, to be able to continue it after season two, because we won't be doing another Kickstarter campaign. Like Kickstarter is for season two only, and then after that we have to kick open the next door. So every season should be a step up.
I love the fact that you have thought this out. And, you know, sometimes, it's, you know, you think things out as you kind of go along, but you've got a plan. And the fact that you have already got an arc for season three from behind the scenes, you know, I think is quite impressive. So it will not surprise me in the least in that you will easily make your $2,600 that you need to in the next 5 days. So everybody give Teletur, go to the Kickstarter page, donate. So can we talk real quick about if there are people out there that don't know what Kickstarter is, Matt, please explain that. But then number two, I want you to tell people what they get when they open up their pocketbooks for you, because you've got some cool things that you are offering
people
if they do.
Yeah, so the way Kickstarter works is it's totally crowdfunded. Like you put a project up there, you say this is what we want to do, it's going to cost us this amount of money, and we're going to have a campaign for however many days. Ours was 30 days. And if we don't make our whole goal, and different crowdsourcing sites are different from this, but this is kind of why we like Kickstarter, if we don't make our whole goal, none of those pledges are processed. So right now we've got $12,412. But we don't actually have anything. That's what's pledged. Like, none of those people have seen any of that money come out of their bank accounts, anything. Nothing gets pledged till we hit our goal, which is what we need to be able to make the show. And I liked that because it meant that we were never in a position where people worried they were going to give us money and nothing was going to come of it, because that happens so often in independent filmmaking. Like, you throw money into something and people have the best intentions and maybe they've even got a great project, but for whatever reason, it doesn't come off and that money's gone. And we didn't want to do that. We wanted to be able to say, if your money gets processed, if you make a pledge to us and it goes through, it's because season two is happening, and you know exactly where that's going. So that's how Kickstarter works. In exchange for that, we get to set up all these levels of backers, is the phrase that Kickstarter uses. We get to set up all these backer levels where we can say, if you give this amount, you get this. So, to be specific, like if you pledge $25 on the Kickstarter page, you get a digital copy of Theater People Seasons 1 and 2, as well as special thanks in the credits and a newsletter that kind of tracks how we're doing things. So you get that for $25. If you pledge $50, and actually that's $50, frankly, is my favorite. I shouldn't say this because we really need big pledges. You get these things at the
Why is $50 your favorite pledge?
It's my favorite incentive, because what we're going to do is if you pledge $50 or more, you get a DVD of Theater People Book Seasons 1 and 2, and we're going to do audio commentary tracks with the cast and crew talking about
fun.
The production process.
I think it'll
be an absolute blast. Like, that's – I'm frankly almost as excited about recording the audio commentaries as I am about doing Season 2, and I'm really excited about Season 2. So – like, that to me is just a really cool way to let people in on sort of I'll give you one story. I was recently rewatching all the episodes because I was putting together Kickstarter stuff, and I realized halfway through one episode that we're auditioning Juliets, and every Juliet that goes up on stage auditions, and you know, it's the audition, I think it's the callback episode, so these people are the callbacks. And I realized, because I never know what to do for character names. Like, you have to have so many character names, and character names can be really tricky. And I realized that I had named every actress auditioning for Juliet after a girl I had a crush on in junior high. Now, I don't remember doing that. I'm sure that I did it on purpose, and I'm sure it amused me when I did it. But I totally forgot about it. And
that's
great. And it was actually with Leah. It was right after I had watched it, and I told that to Leah, and she's like, you guys should do audio commentary tracks. And I'm like, that is actually a really fantastic idea, because there are so many – when you're working on a project like this under the conditions we were working under, like, there are so many great stories and anecdotes, and I would just love to be able to get together with the cast and crew from season one and sit down and, you know, have a beer and just watch these things with them and just record people's, you know, anecdotes. Stories.
That is wild. So, that sounds great. So for the $50, they get that. But you also have some more pricier packages. Without going through every single one, because there's several different levels. What are a couple more that you know, people with a bank account might be more inclined to want to do? You know, because people with money like to spend money, because then they feel important about spending lots of money. So people with lots of money listening tonight, get your wallets out.
And we love them for that so much. That is so important to what we are doing. Other stuff that we're offering, we've got a T-shirt that we're making up that's got one of our favorite quotes from season one on it, which is on the front it says "Theater People," on the back it says "The long hours, the hard work, the lack of traditional boundaries." So that's kind of Theater People in a nutshell. That's the T-shirt. We've got a poster that we're going to print up that is just a whole collection of our favorite quotes from the first season. And then beyond that, we've got things like, and this is more specific a lot of times to the local area, unless people feel like coming out, but like invitations to the wrap party after season two, invitations to the premiere parties after season two, executive producer credit. If we get a backer who comes in and is able to help us out to the tune of $1,000, which is, you know, 1/15th of our entire goal, that's executive producer territory. That's just how Hollywood works. Like, you got somebody who makes it happen. They're the executive producer, you know, like they get to be, you know, labeled as such. So we've got that out there. And then our big thing is anybody who pledges $12.50 or more, we'll take you out to dinner and a show here in town. You can pick the show. We're pretty entertaining dinner companions. You know, once we get up to that point, like, come and hang out with us and just let us talk about how much we love you for an evening. Like, that's basically the idea there. Like, we have so much
that would be really cool
theater going on here. It would be a lot of fun. So. That seems those all seem like really great kind of corollaries to what we're doing.
I think, you know, what would just be easiest, Matt, is if we just had two people each pledge $12.50, because that's your premier package.
That would be easy, Garrett. Just get it wrapped up.
Okay, just let's make this easy, folks. Two people out there pledge $12.50, and then I'll kick in the other $100 and we'll call it a day.
That'd do it, man.
That would be fun. So, everybody, tonight we've had the huge honor and pleasure to have Matt Anderson. He is the writer, director, and producer and creator and all of that good stuff for this fantastic web series called Theater People. If you are looking at the show body, you can actually click the link to watch the entire 10-episode series tonight. You will want to watch the. You'll say, I'll just click the button and I'll just sit here and watch a couple minutes. That's all you need. Just be prepared. Get a big cup of hot chocolate or whatever it is you want to have as a beverage. You're going to watch all 10 episodes back to back to back because you just can't stop. And they go by very quickly. It's not like one of these, oh, holy cow, these episodes are dragging on forever. It's like when you have a good show and you get to the cliffhanger for the week and you can't wait until next Friday night, and I'm thinking of like Dallas, to, you know, tune in.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see the next episode right now. So then click episode two and so forth. So you do that. Like their Facebook fan page.
Binge watch.
Donate on their Kickstarter. And then, Matt, what else, as we get ready to wrap up tonight, what else should people know about either you, the great people of Minnesota, your fantastic people that you're working with? Plug away.
You know, honestly, it all comes back to the Twin Cities theater community. Like, this is the wellspring, which is why I love the fact that the project is Theater People. Like, it uses our resources and it's about our community, and everything rides on that. Like, we couldn't do this without, like you said, we have a huge cast, and our cast is really good. Like, it's not, you know, there aren't actors that we found ourselves having to like be like, oh, we have to cut that scene because we just didn't get it. Like, our actors are the heart of everything, and I couldn't be more fortunate. Like, they do all the heavy lifting, and I just kind of point them in the right direction. And I'd say watch the show, and if you're ever in the Twin Cities, go see a play, because it's really
your local
fantastic
theater. Absolutely, absolutely. Matt, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line for just 2 seconds. Everybody else, this is a little Fontaine's Muse. You can actually hear them again live this Saturday at the Richmond Street Festival in El Segundo. This is their song, WWW, Whole Wide World. We'll be back live early tomorrow night, 6 p.m. East, 3 West, with the Chrysagos Brothers for their entire album, Conversations with God, all 19 tracks. We're going to make it work. Have a great night, everybody. Matt, hang on.
been listening to
Rated G Radio.